It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Leah Eskin has been sharing her life and recipes with readers for about 14 years. She's the Pulitzer Prize nominated author of the Chicago Tribune's food column, Home on the Range. Her new book, Slices of Life, a Food Writer Cooks Through Many a Conundrum, is a collection of those columns and columns she wrote before. She'll be reading tonight from her new book in her hometown, Iowa City, at Prairie Lights Bookstore at 7 p.m. And she is here with me in the studio today. Hello, Leah.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks. It's really a thrill. It's fun to be home.
Now, when you were growing up and you first came up with the idea of becoming a journalist, writing about food and writing about your life was not really what you had in mind. What were your hopes?
No, I decided to become a journalist the summer that I turned 17, and I was very serious, and I wrote out a list of all the jobs that sounded very important, and then I crossed off all the ones that sounded kind of boring, and there was only one thing left, journalist. So I thought, okay, I'll be a journalist, and I'll write about important topics, and I'll be a foreign correspondent, and I'll write long, searing, important pieces. I did not imagine writing short recipes.
Right. So as obviously careers don't always go the way that we think they will, although you had been preparing for this particular career your whole life as well. When you were a child, you spent a lot of time in the kitchen.
I did. My mom's a wonderful cook and loves to cook and is very enthusiastic. And so I found the best way to spend time with her was to learn to cook. And I could be in the kitchen with her, and she was a great teacher. So, yeah, I grew up loving to cook. And actually, when I was in high school, I got a job at a bakery, which I don't know if listeners still remember. It was a beloved bakery in the 70s called First on Fifth, and it was in Coralville. And that was also a great education.
So when did this start to happen? When did the idea of writing about your family life and sharing recipes come together?
Well, I think it came in stages. I did more standard reporting journalism for many years. And when I moved to Chicago, when I was in my late 20s, I started just freelancing some pieces for the Chicago Reader, which is the alternative newspaper there. And when I started doing that, I just decided to try something a little more personal, a little more quirky, a little more me. And I liked it, and my editors liked it. And I suddenly realized, oh, I don't have to just kind of write in this institutional voice. I can develop a little more personality in my writing. And so that part came first. Writing about food came later. When I was writing a column for the Chicago Tribune called Some of the Parts. And it was kind of one of those columns about whatever happened to be on my mind. And it turned out what happened to be on my mind was food. And more I was sort of working food into the column. And eventually my editor said, okay, why don't you make this a food column?
Now, becoming a columnist, I think when people think about a career in newspapers, a lot of people dream of becoming a columnist because it's such an opportunity to really share things that are important to you and your opinions and influence how people think. It's also something that comes with an incredible amount of deadlines. And I've heard some people say that it's like I'm forced to have some sort of great epiphany every day or once a week. What was it like to write a column and try to come up with something to share every day or every week?
Well, you're right. It is a great honor to be a columnist. It's really, for me, a dream job. And it's fun. And at first, definitely, I was worried, like, oh, my gosh, how am I going to do this every week? But I have come to love that deadline. I think it's my best friend. And people often ask me, well, how do you come up with an idea every week? And I always say, panic. That's the best muse there is. And when I think about writing this book, I'm so grateful I had a weekly deadline because it means that over the years I've amassed 500 columns to choose from to make this book.
Absolutely. As you were writing and connecting with an audience, what did you learn about the things that people seem to really connect with you about the most?
That's an interesting question. Well, the nice thing about writing a personal column is it is personal. And I think even if people haven't had, you know, the exact experiences you have, I think they connect with honesty and with, the sort of intimacy of a column. Likewise, writing about food is very intimate. I mean, if you write a recipe and then somebody goes home and they make that recipe and then they eat it, I mean, you've connected on a very intimate level with that person. And people feel very strongly about food. I mean, everyone eats, obviously, and many people cook. And so when someone's making a recipe that I've written, they feel very connected to me, and they often will send me pictures of what they've cooked, or they'll send me their own recipes, and this is how I do it differently. And sometimes they send me their pot holders. I mean, it's really sweet. It's easy to feel connected to my readers with the subjects I write about.
I would love for you to read a little bit of one of your columns to give us an idea of the kind of thing you do, and because it's an experience that so many of us have had. Can you read a little bit for us?
Are you talking about self-help?
Yes.
Okay, so this is a story called Self-Help. I think I wrote this early on in my columnist days, and it's about a couple of problems we all have. Problems collect in hair, migrating from root to split end. Therapies include soothing comb, sunny highlight, and the scissors radical release, all best practiced by the professional. Still, it's troubling to finish treatment disheveled. You suspect hair failure when friends fall silent, followed by the upbeat, "You got your hair cut." Or when one of your younger companions says, "Your hair looks ugly and bumpy, Mom." What this analysis lacks in tact, it makes up for in truth. Your hair looks ugly and bumpy. It has been slashed and spritzed and scrunched into bedhead. Rumple is not your dues, only don't. In an attempt at the angled bob, your hair therapist has sculpted tusks. Tusks do not become you. Curled, they impart that wild rhinoceros look. Straightened, pure babar. Tucked into an untended tangle, the porcupine startle. Taking solace in a deep hat, you shop for bumpy, ugly kale. The checkout clerk, peering from a thicket of curls and springs, confides that his own tousle is self-inflicted. Back home, you lock the bathroom door and find the cuticle scissors. Imitating the stylus's two-fingered grip, you clamp and sever. The results fall somewhat short of professional, somewhat short of stylish, indeed, somewhat too short. But the process is liberating. Turning to your kale chips, kale crisps, you think, this must be self-help.
So you write about personal things that happen to you. That's a funny story. There are many funny stories. You write about your kids. You write about experiences that break your heart as well. Did you have a hard time deciding how much you would share of your life and your family's life in the column?
Well, people often ask me about writing about my children and, you know, is that exposing too much to the world. And I have to say it was really easy at first because my kids were illiterate.
Yes.
And I figured, well, you know, they don't read the newspaper, they'll never know. And then we made this mistake, which is we sent them to school and they learned to read. So it's something I do think about. But
And what do they think about it?
Honestly, I don't think they read the column much. But in our family, we're all writers. My husband's a writer and my kids love to write. And we talk a lot about writing at the dinner table. And I think we all have a good understanding that there's a big difference between a character on the page, even, say, me on the page, versus me in reality. And the same with the characters that represent them. I mean, I think they understand they're kind of a caricature in some ways. That having been said, I try not to embarrass them too much. So I don't write anything that I think would make them feel bad or make them feel exposed later. And same with my husband. If I'm thinking of writing something, poking a bit of fun at him, I do run it by him first.
Obviously, you've decided that his addiction to bicycles and bicycle fixing and bicycle parts is something that is totally fair game.
Absolutely.
If it's ridiculous enough, right?
He deserves it.
So with the column, it was funny because one of my favorite guests on Talk of Iowa is Evelyn Berkby. And she used to host a radio program on KMA Radio. She still does commentaries on KMA Radio in Shenandoah, Iowa. And she was a homemaker on the air. She also, for 60 years, has been writing a column called Up a Country Lane. And a couple of years ago, I talked with her about a collection of her columns that she brought out. And the book is called Always Put in a Recipe, because the first time when she got this job, that was what her editor told her she needed to do. Yes, you know, write well, but always put in a recipe, because that is where you'll connect with your readers. And so in reading your book, I thought, well, what's old is new again. How did it come about that you would always include a recipe with your column?
Well, when I first started working at the Chicago Tribune Sunday Magazine, I was hired to write a column that did not include a recipe. It was just a lifestyle column. It was called Some of the Parts. And as I mentioned, and it was sort of my kind of anything column. And I was working on a story just after 9/11 about my response to that. And at the same time, I had been working at home just on perfecting my chocolate chip cookies, which is kind of a lifelong holy grail of mine, the ideal balance of crispy and chewy. And I had this epiphany, which was if I froze the dough and then baked it frozen, I would get just the right combination of textures that I was looking for. And I had been working on this so long, I had the recipe in my head, and I was like, oh, let me just type this up and I'll add it to my column, and won't that be cool? So that was actually the first recipe I ever included with a column.
And that was on 9/11. That was one of your responses, because you had been spending the day with a preschooler.
Yes.
And in trying to process what had happened, you made chocolate chip cookies.
I did, which, you know, in a way sounds kind of funny, like, wow, you really showed those guys you made cookies. But on the other hand, when you're home alone with two small children, you do what you can do to comfort them. And that's my ritual.
And yourself.
And myself. Yes, absolutely. Because part of it very much is the process. So anyway, I added this recipe to the column and it ran. And I was like delighted. I was like, look at that. I wrote a recipe and it's in the paper. Isn't that fun? And at the time, things were a little scary post 9/11, and we would get these warnings in the Tribune Tower to be careful opening our mail, because there had been the scare of people sending anthrax through the mail. And so there was a whole protocol of how you were supposed to open your mail. And I started getting not anthrax, but hate mail, nasty letters from people who were very mad about my cookies. And I thought, geez, why are these people so uptight about chocolate chip cookies? And after I got like the second or third letter, I went back to the column and I discovered there was a mistake in it.
Oh, no.
So I went to my editor and I confessed. I said, oh, there's a mistake. There's not the right amount of flour. And she said, oh, didn't you know you're supposed to send out recipes for testing? So that's how I learned one part of my job.
And from then on, although you got sort of a negative response to that first recipe, did something go off in your head and you said, you know what, this really connects with people?
Yes. I mean, it does connect with people. And people find a lot of comfort and a lot of joy in food, as do I. And I love cooking, and I discovered, despite that first mistake, that I do enjoy making recipes. And so it was easy to transition into a similar column that like your previous guest, always includes a recipe.
I'm talking with Leah Eskin. She is the Pulitzer Prize-nominated author of the Chicago Tribune's nationally syndicated food column, Home on the Range. Her new book is called Slices of Life, A Food Writer Cooks Through Many a Conundrum. It's a collection of her columns and her recipes, and she will be reading tonight in her hometown, Iowa City, at Prairie Lights Bookstore at 7 p.m., We're going to take a short break here. We'll be back in a few minutes. If you'd love to join the conversation, please feel free. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me this hour is Leah Eskin. She is the Pulitzer Prize nominated author of the Chicago Tribune's food column Home on the Range. She has a new book, which is a collection of all of those columns. It's called Slices of Life. A food writer cooks through many a conundrum. She grew up in Iowa City, and she is in Iowa City. Today, she'll be reading tonight at Prairie Lights Bookstore at 7 p.m. And if you would like to join our conversation, maybe you've been one of her readers for many years, or maybe you've known her from from childhood, you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Leah, before the break, we were talking about, well, we were talking about including recipes, but we were also talking about the decisions that you've made to share stories from your life. And many of the stories are funny and cute, about your kids, about trying to make the perfect Arctic birthday party, or getting a bad haircut, or that a trip to the ER because your daughter had a plastic toy stuck on her finger, something you would never think would send you to the emergency room. But you've also shared the big moments in life as well, including moving across the country, your own breast cancer. Was it difficult to make yourself that open, to open up about those big things?
excuse me, not really. I think that's what I like about writing. It's a way to take bad things and make something okay with them. And I think those are the things people connect with. Everyone's got hardship and heartbreak, and I actually like writing sad stories. I think, you know, they've got some depth. And we had a dog named Theo who was just a terror. Everything he did was really difficult. And so we used to talk about the Theo theory of life, which is, you know, anything that's bad makes a good story. So I use that in my writing.
When it comes time to write about something that is so close to your heart and difficult, do you approach it differently than you would sharing a funnier story? Or even, you know, a story about a dog being incredibly bad is as funny, as frustrating as it may be at the moment at which it happens to you. But these other stories, do you have to take a different mindset?
No, I think writing is writing. And I always try to provoke some response in myself. So if I am writing and I can make myself smirk or smile or laugh, I figure, okay, that's good. And if I can make myself cry, then I figure that's good too. I mean, if I can get a response out of myself, I hope I can get a response out of readers. So no, the process is not different.
You've played a lot with voice over the years, and I can see that in your collection. There's the third person, there's first person, there's second person. What was your process like? I mean, was that something there was an evolution, or was this something where you would just try something?
More like just try something. I mean, to me, the whole project of writing the column is about writing. It's not, I mean, of course there are recipes and of course they're delicious, but the real point is to stretch myself as a writer and to have as much fun as I can as a writer. And so I just thought, well, you know, the word essay means try. So I'm going to try first person, second person, third person. I'm going to try past, present, future. And in a story about the pasta gnocchi, I tried to use every word in the English language that starts with GN. It's just a little challenge to myself.
You did a great job, I felt.
Thank you.
So in writing columns, I mean, you do get letters from your readers. And of course, email is pretty darn immediate. But how do you know when something works?
Well, I guess you do hit the nail on the head there. I suppose when I get a lot of mail, that means it works. And it's certainly the more heartbreaking stories that get the most mail. I mean, when I had breast cancer, I didn't work for a year. When I was first diagnosed, a friend who had also been through the process, told me that she missed 6 weeks of work. And I was horrified. I thought, oh, no, I'm going to miss 6 weeks of work.
And really promised yourself, not me, probably.
No, no. Yes. I was like, oh, I'll be back soon in that. Well, as it turned out, it took a year until I got back to work, which was a big surprise to me. So when I did come back, I wrote kind of a here's where I've been, folks. No, because we didn't exactly explain to our readers. It was just sort of I'm out. And so I wrote a story about having breast cancer and getting back to work. And definitely that got a huge response, partly, I suppose, because people wondered where I'd been, and partly because many, many people have been through the same experience or something similar. And those letters were wonderful. It was really great to hear from readers and to know they were still out there. And you know, people want to share their stories, so that was wonderful.
Well, I felt like you did several columns that referred to this time as well, and I thought you did such a beautiful job celebrating some of the lovely things that happened during that time too, the support of friends, welcoming an au pair into your family, which sounds like that was quite an adventure, and also the connection of food through all of that. You wrote a beautiful column about the first real meal you were able to make for your family and your kids when you were feeling better.
Yeah, well, the difficult thing for me, among many, when I was sick was that I didn't cook and couldn't really eat. And for someone who's so focused on food, that was hard. And for someone who's a mom, that's really hard because, of course, most of my job, aside from driving carpool, is cooking meals for my kids. And just amazingly and wonderfully, even though we were new in Baltimore, our friends and neighbors and colleagues and honestly people we didn't even know made us dinner every night for many, many, many months. And I was deeply grateful for that. And at one point, my neighbor, who I met through my dog, Theo, brought over this paella. And it just cheered everyone up. And it was so delicious. And I felt like that was the life-saving paella. And that is the recipe that goes with the story.
Wonderful. I'm wondering, you know, we're talking about some of the heavier subjects that you've had to write about, and you wrote the most beautiful tribute to your father. And I was wondering if you could read that for us.
Sure, I'll read that. Let me just find the page. Okay. This is called Lessons Learned. My dad was good at fixing things, and he got plenty of practice. Our living room was lit by a black clay lamp carved into a lattice pattern. It stood on the table next to the sofa, ground zero for the flying pillow or the flailing foot. The lamp was often swept off its stubby clay feet, landing on the floor in pieces. Not big pieces. Many, many small black pieces. Dad would fit the shards together, working the black-on-black 3D puzzle. He set each fracture with epoxy and splinted each weak spot until it cured. Then he'd carry the lamp back into the living room and set it on the table next to the sofa. Dad handled all kinds of fix-its. When I dropped a blueberry tart face down in its bakery box, he caulked the faults with whipped cream. When I tipped over a bottle of ink and my brother Ben took the blame, Dad soothed the furrowed brows. After I left home, I still saved my repair jobs for him. The weekend baby Hannah arrived, Mom cooked, and Dad glued all the chipped cups and bowls. He got the light switch to work and the wobbly chair to hold still. Later, when Hannah cracked her china ballerina, we slipped the pointed feet into a plastic bag and waited for Dad to visit. When Noah's train uncoupled, we parked it in Dad's to-do stack. Years ago, when Dad got sick, I made a custard to chill into his old favorite, peach ice cream. Then I dropped the churn. Dad hammered the dented cooling cylinder back into shape. When he got sick again, we all tried to mend him. The doctors tried surgery and medicine and machines. The rest of us tried to work the many-piece puzzle of his care. Mom tried everything, night and day, day after day, month after month. We tried hope and, in our own ways, prayer. But we couldn't fix him. Now, I don't know what we'll do when things need fixing. He taught me so much, how to tell time, ride a bike, multiply fractions. He taught me patience and perseverance. He taught my children how to build pots, roast marshmallows, and catapult strawberries across the living room. But he didn't teach us how to mend a broken lamp or cup or heart.
Leah Eskin reading one of her columns that's collected in her new book, Slices of Life, A Food Writer Cooks Through Many a Conundrum. Have you, over the last 14 years in writing these columns, have you come to a point in your life where it doesn't feel like something is complete unless you write a column about it, a milestone?
Well, I don't know if I'd say that, but I'm certainly glad to have material. And sometimes I'm a little desperate for that material. But that is one thing I like about writing the column, is that it's become kind of a scrapbook of memories. And I'm so glad I have that scrapbook. And I'm so glad that it covers the years that I've been parenting, because as we all know, you get busy and you forget things and you don't take time to remember them. And in a way, I'm kind of forced to sit down each week and remember something from that week and put it on paper. And that's really nice to have.
How does the process of selecting recipes come about? Because clearly there are some columns where it's a natural. There are some columns where the food is included in the story. There are some columns where it's not, where it's a little more tenuous a connection. Are there times when it gets really difficult to figure out what you're going to share?
Definitely. In a way, I mean, I always say, well, I have at least a word or two that somehow links the idea of the column to the idea of the recipe. Sometimes it's pretty tenuous, as you point out. There are times when the recipes come first, like I'll try something new at a restaurant and I just think, oh, this is great. I've never had this, and let me figure out how to make this dish, and then I have to figure out a story that goes with it. So that's sort of the trick. And then sometimes it's the other way. It's like, oh, I want to tell this crazy story about making a campfire and lighting my backyard on fire. And gee, what goes with that besides a marshmallow, which isn't much of a recipe? So it's always a little puzzle. But, you know, usually they come together. And the worst is when I turn in a recipe, because I do have to turn in the recipes quite a bit earlier for them to be styled and shot in the Tribune studio. And then my deadline comes around, and I'll look at the recipe and I think, gee, why did I turn that in? What was I thinking? And then
you don't remember what the connection is?
Or maybe there wasn't one. Maybe it was
I
like that kind of pie. So then, of course, I have to kind of really work that puzzle. But I do keep a little list of potential ideas, and I keep a little list of potential recipes, and hopefully they all come together.
Now, you don't repeat recipes exactly. I did notice that lemon tarts came up twice.
Oh, yes.
In the book, which I think shows incredibly good taste. But do you ever get to repeat? I mean, obviously, we all have our favorites.
Well, surely at home cooking, I, like most people, I think have about 6 recipes that I make night after night. Cooking for my family is a very different project than cooking for work. I mostly try not to repeat, because there are so many recipes in the world and there's only so many I do each year. But every now and then I'll come back to something. I think, oh, I have a new way to do that. Let me take another crack at that. But I would say that's happened very few times.
Now, again, to refer to Evelyn Birkby, who has had this column in Shenandoah for so many years, she said her family used to tease her because she would, of course, she tested her own recipes, but she, her sons would always complain because they'd say, well, Mom, if you make something perfectly, then we never have it again. So if something's a big hit, then she published the recipe and then would move on. Do your kids ever complain about you trying to make the things that you're writing about and trying to get them right and maybe making them too often or never again?
I guess I've had both. I mean, the one that comes to mind, like the story you just told, is I once made some pulled pork, which was a 16-hour ordeal, standing in my driveway in Chicago. And at the end of it, it was extremely delicious, and I have never, ever, ever even considered making that dish again. And my daughter, she teases me like once a year. She'll say, can we have pulled pork? And I'll say, no, no way.
You can make pulled pork, honey.
More often it's the opposite. I do test my own recipes at this point, and developing recipes even more so is a long process. And I do make the same dish over and over and over until I like it. And so, of course, there's a lot of versions along the way that aren't perfect. And I often ask my family to taste them. And our kind of most famous family example of that was I was trying to make cassoulet, that very heavy bean stew with lots of duck confit and pork and such. And it's not exactly kid fare. And every day my kids had to try like a new cassoulet. And I was like stuffing their thermoses with cassoulet. And they're like, no, no more cassoulet.
When most of their friends had never even heard of cassoulet.
Right. They were the only first graders saying, we won't eat cassoulet.
That's very funny. So you've been writing these columns for many years. Is it different to have them collected in a book? Does that feel different?
Yeah, it feels different and it is different. The book is not just kind of a stack of columns. I think originally I thought, oh, I got a whole bunch of these. I'll just send them off to my editor and ta-da, it's a book. But surprisingly, it turned out I actually had to think and work to make the book. And it took me a long time to figure out how to organize it. And there's quite a bit of material that's new that wasn't originally in the columns. Quite a lot of recipes that I reworked because I had new ideas about how to do them. And the idea, and I hope it works, is for it really to be a memoir, for you can read it front to back, and it's just a memoir, and you don't need to cook one thing, not even boil water, to enjoy it as a book. Or you can use it back to front as a cookbook and just, you know, cook the recipes you like, and you don't have to read the stories if you don't want. So it's, I hope, a whole new thing, different from the column.
And you've written something about becoming an author.
I have.
Would you share that with us?
I would love to share it. This is not from the book. It's a piece I wrote for my column, and this ran the week that the book was published, which was April 1st. And it's called Gaining Authority. At library, which came before lunch on Wednesdays in second grade, we browsed the stacks. There, I found something shocking. I chose a slim hardcover, the sort sprinkled with line drawings and printed in large font to steady the shaky reader. It opened with a child wandering the forest. By page 3, she met with a large font calamity that violated the standards of our classroom. The sentence began with a capital letter. It contained both subject and verb, and finished without a period. Horrified, I marched the defective book to Mrs. Westry, who smiled. She was glad I knew the rules, but authors, she said, are permitted to break the rules. I stared at her for a long time. Then I thought, sign me up. This week, long since signing up as a journalist, my first book will be published. It's a memoir cooked up over 10 years of writing this column. It contains many a renegade sentence, but I'm comfortable breaking the rules because now I'm an author.
Oh, that's wonderful. What does it mean to you to come home to your hometown in Iowa City? You've been in Baltimore now for a long time, and I know that's home to you. But what does it mean to bring this book with you and come back to Iowa City?
Well, it's the best. The book's been out a couple months, and I've had quite a few readings in different places around the country, and they've been great. It's been wonderful to connect with readers, but somehow I haven't had that like big moment of like, wow, I really wrote a book. And I'm thinking that moment will happen tonight at Prairie Lights, because Prairie Lights, you know, it's the bookstore I grew up with. It's where I bought my first books of all sorts, and, you know, where I've spent a lifetime of great browsing and listening to authors. And, so reading at home at my favorite bookstore, I think that'll feel great.
All right. And of course, that's tonight at Prairie Lights at 7 o'clock. You've been through a lot with the newspaper industry, and your husband also is a journalist. And there have been a lot of ups and downs in his career and your career. How do you feel about being a newspaper columnist in 2014?
Well, great question. It's I never thought starting out as a journalist that the thing I'd have to worry about was the actual industry crumbling. I mean, I hate to say this, but there has been an upside for me, which is when I started writing, I wrote specifically for the Chicago Tribune Sunday magazine, and that's where my column ran. And then when things fell apart at the newspaper and they, for the most part, folded the magazine, my columns moved over to a new section called Sunday, which is not as fancy as the magazine. It's on newsprint, but, you know, at least they kept it. I thought I was glad that I still had a job. And then, of course, all newspapers were having troubles, financial troubles. And, of course, most of them fired whatever food columnists they had. So the Tribune started selling my column to other papers. So, I mean, of course, I really wish every paper had its own food columnist. But for me, it was kind of nice because the column ended up running all over the country. And I got, you know, readers from all different areas. And it changed the column a little bit because it became less of a regional thing about Chicago and more of a national thing, really focused on home cooking. So there has been some upside for me. That having been said, it's a little scary. I'm not fully switched over to the internet age, so I'm still hanging on to the newspaper and hoping it's going to survive.
Well, and for you, as you mentioned, you came out, you were the cream on the top. So you are still in good shape. But does that just make you worry about, I mean, think about your 20-something self trying to get into the business. There are so many young writers who have far fewer opportunities today in newspapers.
Yeah, I mean, fewer and more. Like, I think in a sense, it's very easy to get published now. You can just make your own blog and put up your stuff and there you go. And of course, there are zillions of outlets on the internet. And in a way, that's wonderful. And you can go out there, especially food blogs. There are so many. On the other hand, I was at a reading last month in Glencoe in Illinois, and a young writer said, well, what's your advice to young people who want to become food writers? And I kind of stumbled on the question, but here's what I wish I had said to her, which is, and it's counterintuitive because most people will just go out and write their blog and be happy that they're sort of self-publishing. But my advice is find a place to write where you've got an editor, because that's how you learn and that's how I learned. And I'm very, very grateful that all the stuff I wrote when I was in my early 20s did not get published. There was a lot of bad stuff I wrote, and a lot of editors said no to me. And that's a good thing.
Leah, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun.
Leah Eskin, her new book is Slices of Life. A food writer cooks through many a conundrum, and she will be reading tonight at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City at 7 p.m. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.